Redistricting reform is a contentious topic, often split down party lines in legislative bodies throughout the country. This led many states to adopt independent panels which are supposed to draw the lines without bias. I'm Bob Zaltzberg, editor of the Herald Times, and this week we'll be discussing the efforts in Indiana to ensure fairly drawn district lines and what challenges are faced in the pursuit of redistricting reform. We'll talk about that topic after this hour's news. Production support comes from Smithville Fiber, the GigaCity Company, a philanthropic community partner since 1922 and proud supporter of numerous community organizations. More information at smithville.com. And School of Public Health Bloomington, public health reimagined, addressing 21st century health challenges with a multidisciplinary approach to disease prevention, health promotion, and enhancing quality of life. publichealth.indiana.edu. Welcome to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg, editor of the Herald Times, along with WFIU-WTIU News Bureau Chief Sarah Whitmire. Four state bills were proposed this year addressing redistricting reform by creating a nonpartisan redistricting commission, but none of them passed despite bipartisan support. Today we're going to talk about what happened in the legislature, why redistricting is important, and the challenges lawmakers face in implementing reform, also how it would impact Hoosiers. We have three guests in the studio with us today. Tommy Allison is here. Tommy is the former mayor of Bloomington. Also, Marjorie Hershey, the professor of political science at Indiana University and a frequent guest on our show. And also, Kate Cruikshank is with us. She's the president of the League of Women Voters of Bloomington and Monroe County. You can join us on the program at 812-855-0811 in Bloomington or 1-877-285-9348. You can also follow us on Twitter at Noon Edition. Before we get going too far into the program, let me say that we did make several invitations to Milo Smith, the Republican chairman of the House Elections and Apportionment Committee. We didn't receive a response from him, so Mr. Smith is not with us today. He can give us a call if he wants. That would be great. So, Kate, I'm going to start with you. Could you sort of rehash what happened in the legislature this year?
Okay. Would you like me to start with the Interim Study Committee because it goes back that far?
Yeah, that was in 2015.
Yeah, in May 2015, the legislation was passed, and much to the surprise of a number of us, I think, to set up an Interim Study Committee on redistricting. And that was chaired by Jerry Torr, co-chair. He's Republican in the House. And the co-chair was Brant Hirschman, Senator Brant Hirschman. And the first move, I should back up and say that there has been, prior to this also in Indiana, something called the Indiana Coalition for Independent Redistricting. And that is the two major partners in that are Common Cause and the League of Women Voters of Indiana. And they were standing at the ready when that legislation passed and had a list of citizen appointees that they wanted to see on that committee. And they mobilized all of us to sort of write and call and so forth. And much to our surprise, they in fact appointed from that list. So we had really it was very encouraging. We had an interim study committee that had knowledgeable people. One of them was former Supreme Court Justice Ted Boehm. Another one was Tom Sugar, who has worked very hard on looking at the Iowa redistricting plan and trying to think how that might be adapted to Indiana. Another one was Sheila Zeus Kennedy from the IUPUI Law School. And then former Senator Beverly Gard was a Republican. So those were the four citizen members joining the rest of the committee. They didn't meet until October. And we were all mobilized, and we packed the room packed the committee room and were flowing out into the halls. And at that time, they just did some, made some preliminary statements, so we got a sense of where people stood. And then the next meeting was projected to be after the legislative session, the 2016 legislative session. And it was indeed in May. Jerry Tor again had us in the same committee room. We exploded the boundaries of the committee room when we were out in the hall. And Julia Vaughn from Common Cause testified, saying, among other things, that we need a larger room. So in July, we were assigned to the House chamber, and the committee met in the House chamber, and it was packed. We had two-thirds of the gallery packed and the whole chamber. And the whole point of this is just that it was not just a game within the legislature. The whole point was there are people all over the state who care about this, and we were trying to demonstrate that. And people were coming from all over the state. So there was the July meeting. At the September meeting, they began to try and draft legislation. And at the October meeting, then that was presented. And much to our amazement, it was reported out to be then put before the House, or put before both houses, and there were identical bills, Tim Linane in the Senate and Jerry Tor in the House, and then there were two other versions of those. Then we sat and waited for committee meetings, and finally on February 15th, the House Elections and Apportionment Committee did meet. Milo Smith took testimony for almost 2 hours, took everyone who wanted to speak. And again, the House chamber, it was in the House chamber, it was completely packed. And I think that he just looked at his members and realized he didn't have the votes, that it was not, it simply wasn't going to pass out of committee, and therefore it was going to go nowhere. So that's where it stood. It was a shock that I think the Democratic, a couple of Democratic members of the committee were trying to call the question, and it just didn't happen. A lot of people were shocked about it, but I have looked at it and thought about it and thought, well, if you don't have the votes and you don't call a vote, at least it's not been killed. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one way to look at it. It wasn't rejected.
Yeah, he called it an unfinished product.
It definitely is an unfinished product. As it came out of the interim study committee, there were two or three areas that were very important that needed some work. One of them was the way the commissioners themselves would be selected. A pool was to be created from which they would be drawn, but that pool was going to be established, according to the legislation, by nominations by the presidents of Purdue, Indiana University, and Ball State, and the Chief Justice. And when that was first presented to us at the July meeting, the whole House chamber started laughing. Because, of course, it's a little hard to imagine that institutions that are dependent on the legislature for even as small a chunk of their funding as they are now getting would somehow be able to not think of that, you know, when they're making these appointments. So that's a problem area. The Common Cause, working with the Indiana Coalition for Independent Redistricting, has come up with a couple of alternative approaches to that. So that was one area. Another major area that was problematic was that the legislation required that if the commissioners were to talk with legislators or people who were involved politically, they had to report it. But there was nothing in the bill that said you can't do this, and allowed for the possibility that you would report it if you were cornered at a cocktail party and you couldn't escape or something. But it actually looked like it allowed for the possibility that they could confer, and that just isn't acceptable. Mm-hmm. And then the third piece is this wonderful, wonderful little clause in there that says that Senate districts cannot be drawn in such a way that two incumbent senators would be within the same district. Mm-hmm. So already there's a protection of incumbents there, and that is something that would need to be changed. So there are other little tinkerings, but those are the problems. There are other wonderful things in it. For instance, the idea that there would be a website and a portal where citizens could submit maps, and you know, there'd be an openness to considering all these maps and so forth. Some really, really wonderful things. But those were sort of the three problem areas that we saw.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a little step backward and talk about both Tommy and Margie. Why is this so important? I mean, what the redistricting of the legislative districts and the congressional districts. Margie, I want to ask you first, I guess, what's this is an every 10-year process. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. The Supreme Court told us in the early 1960s that every person's vote should count equally with every other person's vote in U.S. House elections in a couple of rulings. To make that happen, the court said, every U.S. House district has to have almost exactly the same population as every other one. You couldn't have one House member representing 100,000 people and another representing 5,000 people, as had been the case in the past. So the court said every 10 years after the U.S. Census was done, every state had to redraw its legislative district lines to make sure that after people had moved from one area of the state to another, that all the House districts in that state were equal in population. All U.S. House districts across the country were. But the court did not tell the states exactly how to go about that. In most states, the state legislature decided that it was going to redraw the legislative district lines itself using either a committee of the legislature or a committee that the legislature appointed and which it had majority control over. So what happened was typically that the party in the majority in that state was able to redraw the legislative district lines to maximize that party's representation, to maximize the number of states, seats that that party was able to win. This is called gerrymandering. After an instance early in the life of the Republic when a Massachusetts governor named Elbridge Gerry and his party drew district lines to increase their party's majority, and a newspaper editor in Massachusetts said that one of those new district lines looked like to him like a salamander. So he called it a gerrymander, which ever since we have mispronounced as gerrymander. And it's even more possible to do that now because we've got these incredibly sophisticated computer programs that can draw district lines so as to completely maximize the majority party's strength. So that in the Indiana State Senate right now, for example, out of 50 senators, only 9 are Democrats. So that's less than 20%, even though in the popular vote, Democrats are close to 40% of the state. So how do they do that? The party's majorities do that by what is called packing and cracking. They take the areas where the supporters of the minority party live, and they either pack them with lots of other supporters of that party so that the party is forced to win those districts with huge, wasteful majorities, or they crack the supporters of the minority party among a whole bunch of districts so that they can't win any of those districts. And the result is unfair representation for the minority party's voters. You can't eliminate their voting strength altogether, but you can minimize it. And there are 3 results typically that are found from that. Only one of which is probably truly due to gerrymandering. One is that clearly it underrepresents a minority that may be close to 50% of the population. Second, it's often blamed for increasing the security of incumbents, that incumbents can draw district lines so that they can always win re-election. So they're essentially picking their voters instead of their voters picking them. The problem with that is that we find that the incumbent re-election rate is increasing in areas where there isn't redistricting. Incumbents are being re-elected more often to the U.S. Senate. And as you know, senators are elected to represent whole states and their district lines don't change from one census to the next. In addition, there's the question of whether gerrymandering leads to party polarization, to an increasing pulling apart of the two parties in which they find it more and more difficult to compromise and to negotiate. And that also has increased even in areas that are not redistricted. So redistricting is not the one-size-fits-all culprit for everything here. But there's no question that it causes underrepresentation of the minority party.
Okay. Now I want to ask Tommy to, well, you can join in.
I would like to go on with what she said. The federal district court in Wisconsin ruled that Wisconsin was gerrymandered. And one of the problems has been is that the courts have said they really don't have a way of definitely saying this is gerrymandered. And a couple of academics from the University of Chicago, Nicholas Stephanopoulos and Eric McGee, came up with a measure for analyzing whether or not there was gerrymandering. And they call it the efficiency gap. And they look at the actual vote, and they can, with a formula, they can tell whether or not the districts are gerrymandered and to what percent. You know, at 0%, they're not gerrymandered. So let's take Indiana as an example. In 2010, the election for Indiana's election for Congress. And these were districts that were designed in 2001 at that census. The Republicans won 59% of the popular vote and 67% of the vote, six in all. The efficiency gap there was zero. And if it had been exactly zero, it was close to zero. If it had been exactly zero, they still would have won six seats and the Democrats three. There was no gerrymandering. But in the 2016 election for Congress, which was gerrymandered redistricting in 2011, the Republicans again won 59% of the popular votes, but a whopping 89% of the seats, and that was eight seats in all. And this was a huge efficiency gap of 0.21, which meant that had it been zero, the Republicans would have won only six seats instead of eight, and the Democrats three instead of only one. Now, if you want to look at nationwide, you have in 2016, with not quite half the national vote, the the Republican congressional candidates won 55% of the House seats. Bring it back to the state legislature in Indiana in 2016. The Indiana House of Representatives, the Republican popular vote of 58% equaled 69% of the votes, not gerrymandered. But the Senate, with 25 of the seats up for election out of the 50, the Republican popular vote was 58%. And they got 76% of the seats. So they took three-fourths of the seats, and that definitely is gerrymandered. Okay? Now, when you ask, you know, what's the downside of gerrymandering? Well, of course, it means minority rule by the way they draw the districts. But also, while looking at some of these figures, we found out that there's a lot of totally uncontested seats. Mm-hmm. In the House of Representatives of the state of Indiana, you have one-third of the House of Representatives has no contest in the primary or in the general election. Democrats, 16 uncontested seats. Republicans, 17 uncontested seats. That's, you know, one-third. One-third of the House of Representatives. In the Senate, with 25% of the seats up for election, you had half uncontested. Half of the seats uncontested. You had Democrats with six uncontested seats and Republicans with five uncontested seats. Now, what this means is that those candidates don't have to listen to the electorate at all. They don't have to show up at any of these forums, which are not, right? A lot of them are not showing up anymore, right? The voter has no choice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this, I love this expression, you know, if competition is good in business and the consumer has more choices, then competition is good in politics where the voter has some choices as well. And again, what Marjorie said about this pulling of our politics, it pulls it to the extremes because the election is over in the primaries. They don't have to face the general election, which is more moderate votes. The more ideologue, both parties, vote in the primaries. But in the general election, where the more middle of the road, you know, the average voter and stuff like that, it's over in the primaries when you have the uncontested races, the safe seats. So there is a real problem. Now, this just wasn't a happen. And this isn't just like it's always been. This is extreme gerrymandering. And it started in 2008 when money poured into the state campaigns to make sure that the Republicans were in power in 2010 to do the redistricting in 2011. And it was nationwide. It changed the U.S. Congress. And it's changed the states, and it's not going away. The Republicans now control 70% of the state legislatures and 60% of the governors. And they control both the legislature and the governors in 25 states. The Democrats only 7 states. It's going to be an uphill battle for the citizens to have a choice in the elections. Mm-hmm. And by the way, just on this business about, you know, this whole voting system, because what we're talking about is our democracy. We're talking about how our democracy system works. You know, academics have looked at it, and they looked at it on an international scale, and they say there are 3 things to say whether a democracy works well. One is how they draw the district boundaries. 2, voting procedures, which is ease of registration, ease of voting. You don't have the voter ID. You have ease of getting to a polling place, hours of election. There's that. And the last one is effectiveness of finance regulation. And all of these, what is our rating? We're 52 out of 153 democracies in the world.
All right. Thank you, all 3 of you. We've set the stage for the second half of our program now, and hopefully we'll get some callers in that want to talk about this issue, redistricting. We were talking today. That was former Mayor Tommy Allison. We have Margie Hershey, professor of political science at IU, and Kate Cruikshank from the League of Women Voters of Bloomington and Monroe County. We're talking about redistricting. We're on Noon Edition. We'll be right back.
This is Noon Edition on WFIU. Production support comes from Smithville Fiber, online at smithville.com, and IU School of Public Health Bloomington, online at publichealth.indiana.edu. WFIU News covers South Central Indiana and the state each day. You can read news throughout the day as it's posted on our website at wfiunews.org. And you can pick up a digest of all the top stories. It's like a newspaper delivered to your inbox each weekday afternoon. It's a free and easy way to stay on top of not only the headlines, but also the in-depth audio, video, and print news stories you can't get anywhere else. Subscribe right now at wfiunews.org.
Welcome back to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Salzberg from the Herald Times, along with Sarah Whitmire from WFIU and WTIU, and we're having a discussion today about redistricting and the potential for redistricting reform that had bipartisan support but didn't make it out of the legislature this year. Tommy Allison, former mayor of Bloomington, Marjorie Hershey, professor of political science at IU, and Kate Cruikshank, the president of the Bloomington-Monroe County League of Women Voters, are here. I'm Bob Salzberg. Sarah Whitmire is here. You can join us at 812-855-0811 and 1-877-285-9348. And at Noon Edition is our Twitter handle if you want to follow us on Twitter. I want to make 2 quick housekeeping things. One is that we did invite Milo Smith, the Republican chairman of the House Elections and Apportionment Committee, to join us on the program today. There were several invitations to him, and we didn't get a response, but we did want Milo Smith to be on today. And also, when Mayor Allison was talking about what do you call it, Tommy? The discrepancy between the
efficiency
gap.
Yeah. That's 1%. But you're right that the Democrats should be 2 instead of 3.
Right. Yeah. So that's, but there's still a gap because the efficiency would say there should be 6 and 3.
Yeah.
So, all right, just wanted to correct that number. All right, so. Kate, you wanted to add a different perspective?
Yeah, I have a little different perspective. This issue gets cast very quickly in partisan terms, and we talk about parties and party power and so forth as if that were really the essence of things. And, of course, it's not. It's adequate representation. Fair representation is the essence of things. And I wanted to just share a couple of things. One is the question of whether a person who lives south of 3rd Street in Bloomington and east of High Street and, say, south to the edge of Bloomington is part of the same constituency as someone who's living just south of the Hendricks County line. Those people will be represented by the same person in the state legislature. And the question is how they would ever get together, how they would ever be able to do what Article 1, Section 31 of the Indiana Constitution says they should be able to do, which is to assemble together in a peaceable manner to consult for their common good and instruct their representatives. I mean, that's in our Constitution. So the assumption is that the people who are represented by someone would somehow be able to gather to discuss and to then confer with their representatives, instruct their representatives. And I think that is a major issue, something to be thought about. This is often discussed in the context of communities of interest. That's the phrase that's used. And it's often disparaged because people say, well, how do you define a community of interest? Well, I suppose a large group of people living in same general area might be a community of interest. But to look at the other side of this, and I think this is important, I would like to just go back to a meeting of the election or the Interim Study Committee on Elections that I watched last August. And Milo Smith and Greg Taylor they're the two, the House and Senate chairs of the elections committees were there, and they introduced themselves. Milo Smith said, I'm from district whatever it is, I'm from Columbus, and Greg Taylor happens to also be from Columbus. And he said, well, I'm Senate district this, and I'm from Columbus. And then they went around the room, and they got to about 5 people down, and one person said, well, I'm from district, I don't remember what it was. And he said, and I have parts of this county and 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 this county, 6 of them. And he said it in a kind of exasperated way. And the person next to him said, well, I'm from, and then he named his district, and he had 7 counties. And the way they said it was so telling to me because I thought, how are they supposed to represent people? What are the instruments through which they communicate with people? The newspapers, the fairs, the gatherings. They've got a chunk of this and a chunk of that and a chunk of another county. So that is a really a major problem. And when people talk about the sprawling District 60 from southeast Bloomington up to the Hendricks County line, the question can also be raised, well, how easy is it to represent that? Similarly, for District 46, which goes from the very extreme northwest corner of Bloomington, takes in Ellisville, and goes all the way over to Terre Haute. How easy is that? So it's not just a party issue. It's a question of whether we can be fairly represented by people who can learn about our interests and represent us. And I'm assuming they're trying. I mean, I'm assuming they want to do a good job. So this is working against them.
So, Marjorie, maybe you can weigh in here. Just what is the argument for drawing districts the way Katie's described?
The argument in terms of?
In terms of why we stretch these districts out, that they cover 7 counties in some cases, why not make them more localized or contained, I guess, to a smaller geographic area?
Because they are drawn to maximize partisan advantage. So we've seen some instances of congressional districts in some states where literally you can see a congressional district that goes along a highway loops up to pick up a couple of houses here and then down to pick up a couple of houses there and then goes around a corner. And, you know, the thing is hundreds of miles long and about three blocks wide. And its only purpose is to get a particular party elected.
And it's always the majority party who's leading us. What role does the minority party play?
It's usually the majority party. Sometimes some state legislatures have, and of course, you know, if we have the people making the decisions about where these district lines are going to be drawn, who are the people who are then going to have their electoral future decided by those districts, we can't really be shocked by the fact that they're going to try to maximize their own interest. I mean, you know, that just makes sense. So when we have occasional states that have decided to have a bipartisan redistricting commission, what they've done is to not maximize party advantage, but to maximize incumbency advantage, to protect all the incumbents and make it more difficult for challengers to defeat them. So it's not always partisan, but it's increasingly so given the tremendous amount of money that is coming in from a variety of new groups, the Republican Governors Association, the Democratic Governors Association. There is an association of Republican state attorneys general that has raised something like $100 million this year, and another association of Democratic attorneys general. Mm-hmm. And they are putting money into redistricting as well.
One just reminded me of the old District 4 in the state of Indiana, the old congressional district, which included Bedford, south of Bloomington, and West Lafayette. So Purdue University and Bedford were in the same congressional district, but it went wrapped around Bloomington so that the Democrats were isolated elsewhere. And then, Margie, I want to talk about the packing and cracking. I'd never heard that term. I love that term because it does describe exactly what happened to Bloomington in the legislative districts in the last redistricting.
Right.
Because Bloomington...
We got cracked.
Right. We got cracked. Bloomington got cracked. And, I mean, you can describe what the districts were like here, right? There are five representatives and two senators who represent Monroe County. And four of the representatives are Republicans, and one of the senators is a Republican that represent one of the most Democratic counties in the state of Indiana with four Republican representatives.
So, right. That is cracking. That is
a classic example.
Having the great majority of the Democrats packed into one small area and then the rest of them divided among all these other legislative districts. Now, here's the tricky part. This is a partisan issue in a very funny way, in that Democrats are distributed less efficiently for political purposes across the country than Republicans are. And the reason is that over time, people have become increasingly residentially mobile, and when they move, they're more likely to go to some place where people like them already are. So somebody who values cosmopolitan life, who wants to see a Starbucks on every corner, who enjoys ethnic food, is likely to move to a bigger city where those things are going to happen. And somebody who prefers to have an area that's very traditional and a lot of churches is going to move to a smaller town or a rural area. The problem is that Democrats are more heavily concentrated geographically in big cities than Republicans are. And as a result, congressional districts in big cities, the Democratic candidate typically tends to win by huge wasteful majorities, 85% of the vote. If all he or she needed to win by was 51%, so if you take that 30% and spread it around to the surrounding districts, then Democrats would win that center city district, but they'd also have a better chance of contesting the several other adjacent districts. But as a result, the greater compactness of Democrats makes it more difficult for Democrats to be fairly represented in terms of redistricting. And the challenge here is polarization. When you got a safe district, that means that you as the legislator are not going to have competition in the general election. Where there's going to be competition, if at all, it's going to be in the primary. And we know that the political activists tend to be on the extremes of the two parties. They tend to be in the right wing of the Republicans, the left wing of the Democrats. Bob, did you want to say something?
I want to ask you a question about this because, you know, we're talking about the, you know, the Democrats being at a huge disadvantage. And since 2008, you know, that Democrats have been at a huge disadvantage. But I want you to go back in history and tell me, have Democrats done the same thing?
Oh, yeah. Goodness knows. I mean, whenever they've gotten the shot, you know.
Yeah, but the extreme happened in the latest one,
right?
Because using the same test of the efficiency gap, you can go back, and it was much more balanced. They did it for the Wisconsin thing, and they went back. There's always been an effort to kind of maximize your position, but it was never as extreme as it became after the concerted effort in 2008 and 2010.
I think there are a couple of things that might be helpful here. 2010 was definitely the time, and there's a wonderful book with an unspeakable title by David Daley. I will spell the title for you. It is RATF **KED, The True Story of, oh dear, it's a true story of the attempt to steal our democracy. And what it is a story of how some young Republican political operatives after the 2008 election realized that they were going to have to do something to gain power, and redistricting is what they did. Now, I hasten to say that if the Democrats had done this, they would have been far ahead of the game. I mean, it's not that the Republicans are evil and the Democrats aren't. It's that somehow they were stimulated to get into this and to do it and to use the tools at hand. And it does, but that book will show you how it's done. And I think for people who are trying to understand this issue, it's I found it a cliffhanger, but of course I'm kind of a politico. That's one thing. And another thing to mention for people who are trying to learn about this and wrap their heads around it, there's something called Gerrymandering the Movie. If you just put that in your Google search, the first hit will be it. Click on the first hit, and you're watching the movie. It really does help you understand this in a wonderful way. So I just wanted to be sure and get those resources in.
Okay. If you're shy and you would like a title that you don't have to say, there is also one that's called "Give Us the Ballot." It also goes over how this was planned and heavily financed in 2008 to take over the state legislatures and redistrict and into this extreme redistricting.
Okay. 812-855-0811 in Bloomington, 1-877-285-9348 outside the Bloomington area, and at Noon Edition is our Twitter handle. So we've had an email sent to us that's just from a listener who says, many people have received Representative Trey Hollingsworth's survey, in quotes, which is partisan and a product of gerrymandering. I don't feel represented. It was just a comment that
was coming. Yeah, I think it was the email. What issue would you say is most important to you this year?
Oh, yeah. You can read that.
Well, there are lots of different things on here. It's an email issue survey asking which issue is most important, including repealing Obamacare, cutting government spending, defunding Planned Parenthood, issues that are really important to his base, I think, is what they're getting at in their question.
You'll notice there's no environment on there.
Yeah.
He who writes the questions determines the answers.
But you can select none of the above.
Yeah. We went over to Nashville to hear the League of Women Voters update, and Eric Cook, who is the one who was in charge of the redistricting in 2011, was there and was asked the question, what did he think of the redistricting? And also, Chris Mays represents that area, the House of Representatives, was there, and he said redistricting was should be bipartisan, and that he was in favor of the bill being put forward. But Eric Cook said that the Indiana State Constitution, they were following the Indiana State Constitution and that the legislature would do the redistricting, that they had 9 hearings around the state, and that they offered to the public the computer program to redistrict, and that anybody could redistrict and offer their suggestions, and that it passed the state legislature with a bipartisan support. And so he saw that there was no reason to change the way redistricting would be done. And he took no questions.
that point that the legislature should do the redistricting was one that was brought up at the committee meeting on February 15th by Jim Lucas. And he was very emphatic on this point that that's what the Constitution says. But as a young man who came up to testify pointed out, the Constitution and statutes say that the legislature will do rather a lot of things that aren't actually done by the members of the legislature themselves. In other words, they assign those to staff and to so forth. And so that the letter of the law, the letter of the Constitution would not be endangered by a bipartisan or independent or citizen-led redistricting commission because the legislature has to vote on it and accept it.
Let me just mention here, I think it would be really easy for our listeners to be saying, oh, those overambitious, ratty legislators who are just out for themselves. And I think it's just really important to keep in mind that the guy who was the main writer, the main impulse behind the Constitution, James Madison, had made it very clear that legislators are not angels. They are very similar to each of us. Each of us would probably press our own advantage if we had the opportunity to do so, not just because we want power, but because the parties stand for something. They stand for different things from one another. And if they're going to get those things done, they need power to do it. So this is not a matter of shady state legislators. This is just a matter of self-interest that the folks who wrote the Constitution were well prepared for.
So let's talk about how it's done in other states. Are there sort of good examples out there, maybe, Katie, that you would point to and say, in Indiana, as we're looking towards ways to change this, we should look here?
Well, Iowa is one that's been pointed to frequently, and that is done largely by their legislative services agency. In fact, and this was another plus point for the interim study committee, they did invite someone from the Iowa Legislative Services Committee to testify at length, and he did so. He talked about every detail of this process so that it really was clear how it worked.
How is a legislative service agency different?
It's not different from our legislative services agency, but it's just the way the work would be done, because the legislative services agency here in Indiana is also a nonpartisan entity.
Okay.
They're the experts who draft the bills, who take those bright ideas and actually work them into something that could fit into the code and so forth. But there are commissioners that would supervise that supervise that work.
Okay.
And that's the way our HB 1014, our bill, would look as well. California has a similar kind of thing, but one of the distinctive pieces of difference there is how the commissioners are chosen, and they have a wide open application process. They will get 30,000 applicants to be commissioners, and then somehow that has to be worked through to get down to a workable number. So that's a little bit different. I don't have expertise in all the different variations. There are some that are somewhat have more involvement of the leadership or less involvement. But they're really not a lot that don't have the state legislatures to some degree involved.
I think one of the biggest issues is to have a voter voice into the process, mm-hmm. wouldn't you say? That the citizen would have a voice. As it is now, there's more emphasis on the legislature having the voice, the strongest voice in the
Well, the hard part is that Eric Cook said, I mean, Eric was making the point that the voters had a chance to have a voice. So I don't think the present system is really adequate, sufficient for that voice.
Well, one of the things that you said earlier, and this goes back to the packing and cracking and the fact that some of these legislators, I look at it from the fact that we have, you know, Monroe County has all these different voices and it's not representative of the community necessarily. But the other issue is that if a legislator has six different counties they're trying to get to, or seven, it becomes kind of understandable that they're not going to make every legal women voters forum and every third house.
Absolutely.
Right? So, I mean, I can write editorials about how why aren't all our legislators there, but basically the ones from Monroe County are in Bloomington at the legislative forums, and the ones who have to drive from Terre Haute don't make it. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And to their credit, most of them do respond and explain to me that they can't come. They have other commitments. I mean, we try to adjust our dates, but if we're trying to adjust so that we can get all five members of the House of Representatives and each of them has a meeting on a different Saturday of the month, we're not going to make it. So that from our perspective, that's a problem, yeah.
So the maps are going to be redrawn again in 2021. So maybe start with you, Tommy. So what should we be doing now in order to gear up for that happening?
We have to impress the state legislature that this is an important issue to us and that we would like to have a nonpartisan redistricting.
What is going to happen, however, is that regardless of whether that happens, there is going to be a huge campaign to raise money to control the state legislatures in 2021. The 2020 state legislative elections are going to be just unbelievable in terms of campaign finance because the parties both know that whoever dominates the state legislature in 2021 is going to dominate the redistricting in 2021. It's very difficult to make changes in these things because many voters are certainly concerned, and if you ask them, would you rather have a fairly represented state legislature than an unfairly represented one, they'll say, oh, definitely a fairly represented one. But getting them out of their chairs and into doing something about it is a whole nother question because the question is not whether or not you want fair representation. It's do you want to work on that or do you want to watch basketball? And most people would prefer to watch basketball.
You know, one of the things that I saw that really startled me, because on Reverse Citizens United, we were looking at the campaign chests of these state legislatures. And in 2008, you say the state legislature is a part-time job and they earn under $30,000. Right? Mm-hmm. And so you have Heaton's race, this is Terre Haute to Ellettsville, and the first time he ran against an incumbent, it was $500,000 in his campaign chest, and he didn't win because against an incumbent, but well, next time the incumbent didn't run, and another $500,000. And I haven't gone all over the state to check this out, but I did see a couple of investigative reporters reporting on the region where they were getting startled themselves at the huge amount of money for state representative office. But I think this is where citizens ought to wake up. To whom is that office so important that it's worth $500,000? And we start looking at what has changed in our state legislature, not just the people that were there, but what laws have come down the pike with this new representation up there. If you don't like what you're getting, then you better pay attention on the redistricting. The redistricting, if there's no competition, or if the competition is so tilted, because with this cracking and packing, when they crack it, they make sure that the district they want has more than 51% or about 51% so that it's competitive, but in their favor. What you get as a result, not just that there's a redistricting, what you get is some very bad laws.
I would like to just respond a little bit to what Margie said about what people's choices would be. One of the things that I've noticed since the November election has been an incredible upsurge in activism.
Yes.
And I think that a product of our polarization is that people are beginning to realize there's a lot at stake. And I'm not entirely sure that these groups are all consistent in their political beliefs, but there's a tremendous amount. And people are grappling with the fact that they don't know anything. I mean, I've been working on legislative monitoring, and I've had people just begging to learn about that. And there are groups that start out at 200 and go up to 1,000 members trying to find out how to influence what's going on politically in our country. I find this very exciting. You know, the woman who emails me and says, I was just a complacent housewife. I'm not anymore, tells me that something very positive is happening. And I applaud those people. I encourage them. And we're going to try to have a gerrymander meander down in southeastern Bloomington where 62 and 60 and all come together. And I hope we can get a few more people excited about this by doing that as well.
So does anything happen this summer then with the redistricting legislation, or what happens next with that piece?
We'd have to get another bill into the next session.
So the committee is done meeting?
It's done. It just had 2 years, and it accomplished its goal. And I can't imagine there would be another interim study committee. They really just need to fix the bill. And I would assume that will be part of the process to try and get it introduced and to get sponsors in both House and Senate. That will be a challenge.
We have a tweet that, Tommy, I'm going to let you answer this. What specific actions can citizens do? You've been a very active citizen since you left the mayor's office.
Well, again, you can join the League of Women Voters. They're working on redistricting, and it's nonpartisan. Or you can be partisan and join either party. Because, you know, the Republican Party has been torn apart by this redistricting effort, because you now have a supermajority, and not just the national government has a problem with the Tea Party. You have a problem of the extreme in the state legislature as well. So, contact me. I'm going to be working on it.
Okay. Margie, I'm going to give you the last minute. This is a very complicated and complex issue. I mean, what can we hope for? What would you hope for out of the legislature?
Well, I guess not quite as much damage. I think that this is one of those wonderful teaching moments when, if people don't say, oh, this is terribly complicated, I'm above my pay grade. But if they, first of all, learn something about it themselves and then talk about it with their friends, with their neighbors, with the people at church, with the people who are in their garden club. And that's when democracy happens, with a small d, when people begin to learn and when they begin to hold their representatives to account.
Right. All right. Rousing conversation today. Thank you all very much for being here with us. Tommy Allison, the former mayor of Bloomington. Margie Hershey, professor of political science, who we call our political correspondent here on Noon Edition. Kate Cruikshank, president of the League of Women Voters of Bloomington and Monroe County. And producer Ryan DiBattista, engineer Mike Pashkash, and Sarah Whitmire. I'm Bob Salzberg. Thanks for listening.
Noon Edition is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at WFIU.org.
Production support comes from School of Public Health Bloomington. Public Health Reimagined, addressing 21st century health challenges with a multidisciplinary approach to disease prevention, health promotion, and enhancing quality of life. Publichealth.indiana.edu. And Smithville Fiber, the GigaCity company. Fiber internet, HD, and digital IPTV in Southern Indiana. More information at smithville.com.